Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is hour two of Live the Promise. And if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with my friend Dan Adler, singer, songwriter, worship leader. And I'm telling you what, if you missed it, I'm challenging you to go back when you have some time, get a cup of coffee or tea, sit down with a blanket and a journal, whether you're a dude or a girl. Everybody can have a blanket and a journal, not just girls, okay? But spend some time listening and thinking about how you can pray for your nation. We are in such a day of polarization, of adversarial conversations, people debating over everything. There's just a time to stop all that and pray and to say, start in me, revive me, God, so you can revive this nation. We had a powerful conversation. I pray you'll go back and listen when you can really pay attention and engage. And the reason I want you to have a journal is write down some of the things God's speaking to you about, dealing with you about, and ways he wants you to stand on the wall for your nation. Great hour. Well, we've got another great hour ahead. My good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley, joins us to talk about marriage, especially marriage in crisis. When you're walking through these hardships, when you're hit with a sudden storm, how do you keep your marriage intact? And sometimes the storm is internal, where it's just between the two of you. How do you survive that? Greg's here to offer some great wisdom. So let me give him a formal introduction. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He's the author of 11 Billion Books. I love that number. He and his wife, Erin, live in Colorado with their three daughters, Taylor, Maddie, and Annie. Maddie's known as Murphy, and their son, Garrison. You can find his influencer page at their website. Our website, myfaithradio.com. Greg, I have so many things in my head that I'm thinking I got to ask you about that I'm tripping over your, 11 billion books is correct. Maddie goes by Murphy, and you've got a new member of the family. That's what's just messing with me. You told me that before the show, ask me about the new member, and then I have to go on and do this. And I'm like, is it a fish? Is it a dog? Is it a cat?
I know. I have this effect on
you do.
People,
so you messed me up completely.
Get all weird.
It's all your
out.
Fault that I messed up, right?
my wife's been telling me that for years.
That's really,
so
it's the secret to every healthy relationship. Blame the other person.
We do have a new member. We actually have a cat.
Or more specifically,
a kitten.
A kitten.
And so that was Garrison. Really, he's begged for a cat for like 2 years. Mm. And finally, Erin said, all right, fine. And it was so funny. We just got this like a couple of nights ago. It was for his 14th birthday. So he's now 14. This little kitten is kind of walking around the room, just, trying to get used to our house and all the smells and the noises. And I'm just watching it. And it's walking real careful and looking around. And all of a sudden, it's heading towards, like, we have this little bookcase that has on the bottom part some kind of mirrored, doors. And so it got right there. And all of a sudden, you can see that the hair on the back of its neck just raises up. And it goes, and so it started, because it thinks it's another cat.
Yeah.
And so he's seeing his own reflection in the mirror. And for like 10 minutes, I watched this thing wanted to fight the mirror.
Yeah. Happens to me every morning, every morning. My hair stands on end. I'm ready to bounce.
There's some spiritual application how when we see the image of ourselves that we're fighting that and something.
That's very good.
I figured
good.
I could come up
That's
with some
good.
Way to transition
I like it.
For you.
What's the kitty's name?
Fiona.
Fiona.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Like the Shrek's
Fiona,
wife,
I love
Fiona.
It. My two of my, we raised the dogs. We didn't have cats, but two of my sons and their wives have kittens. And my oldest son bought his wife the funniest t-shirt she was wearing at this weekend, and it says, "You've got to be kidding me. You've cat to be kidding me, right? Meow."
Oh,
it's got a cat with a machine gun. You've cat to be kidding me, meow. Anyway, we digress every time you come on. That's your fault, too. Surely this is not my fault, because it never happens with anybody but you, Greg.
Oh, man. Okey-dokey. We have reached new lows.
Okay, back on track. So how about a verse? You got a verse for me?
I do. The verse is... It's Romans 15:13. So may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit that you may abound in hope. And I love that thought. When anytime we talk about problems in marriage or couples who are going through some hard times, through crises, that I tell you at the end of the day, that's what I need. I need to know that Aaron and I can make it through this. I need to know, I have to have hope that there is light at the end of the tunnel, that God's going to take what we're going through and actually turn it into something that will be a benefit. And so I love the idea of hope. And that's really what the message is going to be about today.
So
in the end, man, we know the end of the story already been decided.
And
so the outcome is there. It's hope
rightly placed is the right thing. Sometimes we hope in a certain outcome and circumstance, and then we're disappointed. But Scripture says hope will not disappoint. And that hope is hope in the Lord. And Wiersbe calls this not a hope-so hope, but a no-so hope. Isn't that good? This isn't a hope so.
You are filled with little bumper stickers and t-shirt sayings. Wow.
You've got to be kidding me right now. That's so funny to me. I don't know why. So sorry. We're in trouble, Greg.
Yeah. What does it say that I think is funny? I think I'm the more problem here. Yeah. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, you are the common denominator. I will give you that.
Well,
all right.
I am a dork.
Okay.
Is there any question about that now?
No comment. All right. So we're going to talk about hope, especially navigating crisis. And Greg, you've got so much content that you teach on in conferences. And if you don't mind, we heard from a listener that wanted to know if you would maybe tackle an issue for them. And I know you've said this before when you and I did Everyday Relationships, that we really can't give in-depth counseling on a live radio show. That's something that's for an ongoing relationship or one of your marriage intensives. But as best as you can with the information that you have, I wonder if you could give some insight to Nick. He wrote us with a question, and here is a portion of what we heard from him. We're having trouble with our marriage. The Christian counselors that were chosen have privately told me that my wife is damaged and broken, and because they don't know what to do with her, I'm expected to suffer in life being married to her. Also, that marriage is not supposed to be happy. Would you share these views from a biblical perspective? And to give some background, this listener's been married for 25 years. They married because they're both believers, but didn't have the tools necessary to build a strong foundation. Nick's being told by his church leadership that he needs to let his wife steer things and set the tone in the marriage, that his role as a husband and father is to lay his life down by not challenging her or making any decisions. He feels lost because he's willing to look at his own behavior, is desperate for outside help, but she's very distant and unwilling to address any of the baggage she's carried into the marriage, which is significant. Wondering what advice you can give him.
Well, I love that he's reaching out, and great question. You know, the place I really want to start, though, is that line you said, that marriage is not supposed to be happy. Bottom line, all right, I hate that concept.
You're okay? Happy. I'm happy.
Well, here's what I'd say, all right. One, first and foremost, God created marriage, and he does not create junk. I mean, it says in 1 Timothy 4:4 that since everything that God created is good. So, I mean, marriage is good. It's supposed to be this great thing between a husband and wife. I mean, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon is talking about that we're to enjoy life with the wife whom we love. You know, there's an entire book called the Song of Solomon that's written. Ideally, it is written to show the two extremes between sort of denial of all pleasure, which was a real popular belief back then, and only the pursuing pleasure. And so Solomon is saying, hey, no. Marriage is a great thing, and we are to enjoy one another. And look, here's a whole book on poetry about, you know, let me tell you what I'm saying about my wife. Man, it is racy. You gotta read it sometime. I love it. So now, Susie, with that being said, so I mean, I want to start with marriage is an amazing adventure. I love my marriage. I love that we have fun times and we laugh a lot and we have hard times and we have pain and we hurt each other and we've got to make that stuff right. And it's all of it. Mm-hmm. And yet, with that said, though, I do believe, though, that truly the purpose of marriage, much like everything else, well, let me say that differently, just exactly like everything else, that our job here on earth is to become more like Christ. pure and simple. That's Romans 8:29. Now, the evidence that you are becoming more like Christ is love. It says in John 13:34 that, you know, men will know you're my disciples by the way you what? By the way that you love one another. And so that's our destiny. Our destiny is within our marriage is to become more like Christ, and everyone will know that. Your spouse will know that as the we just get better and better at loving. So to him, to Nick, I would say, you know, for you, don't ever ask, how can I have a better marriage? If you're going to counseling, if you're involved in this, somehow hoping that we can have a better marriage, I don't ever think that that's the right question. I think the best question is, how can I be a better spouse? Because you can't control the state of your marriage. That takes two people, healthy, growing, trying to become more like Christ, and the outflow and the overflow of that hopefully will be a great marriage that mm-hmm. we're both enjoying. But you can't control that. What he can, though, control is himself. And so what I would say to him is that is, first of all, for counselors to say, well, you know, she's damaged, she's broken. Who isn't?
No kidding.
I mean, come on. I am. I can promise you that.
Right.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. so we're all broken. We're all damaged goods. We're all full of sin. I mean, all of that. And so I would say to him, okay, so Paul, when Paul starts talking to a husband about how to love his wife, that between, that's in Ephesians 5, it starts in 22 and goes all the way to verse 33. All of those words that Paul uses, 70% of those words are directed to the husband in terms of how am I loving? That, see, that, Nick, that's your destiny, that to love her. I don't, it's not that you're about being this martyr and I'm in this terrible marriage and she's damaged and, you know, I don't know what to do and we're not supposed to be happy.
Even,
you know,
having,
I mean,
those things, it is, I love what you're saying, and you've talked before about negative beliefs, and if those things get into his soul, she's damaged goods beyond hope, because those words can really, you know, pierce your soul so much, and marriage isn't supposed to make me happy. I think what that coined phrase, people are maybe taking out of context, and maybe some counselors do at times, but our good friend, Gary Thomas, you know, wrote that word, a book on sacred marriage, and he said, what if marriage wasn't to make you happy, but to make you holy?
Right.
He'd be the first guy to tell you, if your pursuit is holiness, you will find happiness. But the reason he needed to ask that question is because we approach marriage like consumers. What's in it for me? And
right.
I'm not saying Nick is doing that, but I'm just saying sometimes that phrasing gets kind of misquoted. But so to walk through life with no expectancy of happiness and to treat someone as if they're beyond hope, it goes back to the verse you opened with. There's always hope.
There's always hope. And remember, God created an amazing thing in marriage that is one of the most powerful relationships on earth. And I get that we mess it up as humans. And I hear him frustrated, hear him wanting that different. You just can't control that part. You are called to love as a husband. What are we being told to do? We're being told to sacrifice for our spouse. We're being told to cherish our wife. It says in Proverbs that a husband's greatest treasure is his wife. We're told to nourish our wife. We're told to separate from our parents and cleave to her and to be understanding and to forgive and to confront, to speak the truth in love. And so what I would say, Nick, man, lead. That's your job. You love your wife by leading her, by doing those things. Keep going through Ephesians. Keep looking up. What is my role here? And there are going to be times that absolutely that you are going to need to confront her. That there you need to be a leader and not the silent voice sort of tucked in the corner.
Passive.
Because this terrible, horrible, damaged wife is there and you've got to do these things. And so see, that's my advice to him, is that our marriage should lead people to a deeper understanding of who God is by the way that we love one another.
Yeah.
So love well and lead well.
I love that. And to have such an intimate walk with God that as you lead her to know the one who's loved your soul and saved your soul, she'll find redemption as well. And every time you do the things like Greg is saying, to walk in love, to be that person, it's a kingdom step. And God is with you. And there's something supernatural about it that I think could get into your wife and heal her as you lead with love. I love that. More with Dr. Greg Smalley when we come back. We welcome your questions, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hold on, ain't no need to worry about today.
glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good buddy, Dr. Greg Smalley. Always fun to talk with him. We're talking about marriage, navigating some of those hard times. And I know you teach on this a lot, Greg, and you make a distinction between conflict, which is basically internal strife, and crisis, which is about external issues. Both impact a marriage. You want to make a further distinction there?
Yeah, you think about there are so many things that will come at our relationship, whether that's financial problems or disasters, maybe it's a miscarriage, a car trouble, you know, a loss of a job, you know, family strife, a death of a loved one or sickness of a family member. I mean, that's the season that Aaron and I are in right now. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with, you know, my dad is just going through some significant health problems. And so it just creates a very different season. And there are absolutely some important things that we need to be doing to shore up our relationship, to protect our relationship, because it's like each one of these different things that can externally come at our relationship can be so unique, so different that it can just catch you off guard. I mean, Susie, I don't know if you've experienced that, but you know, here dealing with my dad in his health problems, it's hit me in ways that I never thought it could, and it's made me doubt certain things, and it's been bizarre. Well, yeah. That all impacts my marriage.
And you know, when I've done teaching before on physical and spiritual health, Greg, and I've talked about, I want to just see if this translates to you in marriage, but when you walk through an acute crisis, like a sudden big thing, all bets are off, and you kind of just have to navigate through this, you know, storm, because it's short and it's intense. But when it's a long-term crisis, yeah, you have to find a new normal, because you can't postpone re-entering exercise, time with the Lord, putting your own oxygen mask on. And remember teaching at this, and a young woman whose son had cancer, it got to be such a long crisis that she had to go back to running again. And she said it changed her life and saved her life, because she was dying on the vine. That's right. And she could sustain it. Another woman said, my hubby had Alzheimer's. I always felt guilty for going to water aerobics, but her friends talked her into it. When she finally went back once in a while, the community and the exercise gave her what she needed to go sit with her hubby. And I feel like that would probably translate in marriage. When you're going through a short-term acute crisis, all bets are off. You cling to the things you know are true and you get through it.
Yeah, but like just survive.
You do. But this has been going on for a while now for you, for your dad. And so you guys have to find a new normal. And right. And so talk about if that translates for you or not. Some of the absolutes you got to hang on to and things you have to let go of.
I think that one of the biggest things that Aaron and I, seriously, we remind each other of this. So I'm not saying this because it's probably the right thing to say as Christians. I'm telling you, we say this to each other out loud. And that's that we have to recognize the spiritual warfare that will always come with whatever crises mm-hmm. comes at our relationship or whatever crises we're going through within our marriage. It's just, it's so such low hanging fruit for the evil one. I mean, he is always looking for a way in to steal, to kill, to destroy, to disrupt, to fill our minds with lies. And oh, what an opportunity, mm-hmm. because you just, you're reeling and you're confused. And sometimes you may not even notice that you're falling into the despair. Just the other day, Aaron said, we were talking about something. She goes, now, you realize, right, that you're totally depressed. And I went, I say that again. What? What did you just say? Did you just call me depressed? How dare you accuse me of being depressed? And so she goes, you know, I've been waiting for you to kind of talk about this. And I've been seeding little conversations. And she goes, you won't talk about this. I'm like, I'm not depressed. She goes, oh, really? And so she goes, let's talk about this. And so we sat down and had a great conversation at the end. I went, I am totally depressed. I didn't even realize it. And that's, I'm a psychologist. I mean, I should know this. I help other people deal with that. And it's just interesting how it just crops up and rears its head in ways that even I wasn't aware of.
So would you say, Greg, forgive me for asking, and if it's too personal, then push back, but
I'm not going to tell you my weight anymore, so stop asking.
Have you gained weight recently? I'm totally kidding. But truly, maybe. Though, are you in a season of depression, or is this something, I mean, talk about that. Is that something to do with your dad, or what is that?
Yeah, it's all related I liked how you said it. It's instead of just getting through an acute episode to where we'll get through this real quick, so let's kind of hang on, cling to the life raft, and everything will be okay. This is what is new normal going to look like within our life, within my relationship with my dad, within our family. I mean, this is the patriarch of our family.
Yeah.
And again, without going into too many details about what he's dealing with, I mean, it's serious stuff. And it's just, it's really impacted me. I don't know how to deal with all of this, how to help family members and how do we take care of them and who should be doing that and how are we handling finances and just, I mean, the list goes on.
At the same time.
I'm finding myself depressed.
Right. Because I think you're probably going through a couple layers of grief beforehand because you're seeing that he's, you know, that he is somebody who will go be with Jesus someday.
Yeah.
And I think the reality of juggling all that you're juggling, all that you carry in your day job, all that you're managing with your family, and having had your dad live down the block for a while, and now he doesn't because of health things, he's had to move. There's so many dynamics, Greg. I mean, it's no wonder that would kind of creep up on you. And, you know, so here's that example. So what would you do or what can you do to put your oxygen mask on? And we're just kind of using Greg as an example because he really, I mean, you reflect so many people who are managing a lot with a broken heart or a heart that's grieving. And I think if you ignore it, you're going to just hit a wall someday.
Yeah. I think for me, just part of it is trying to realize what is actually going on for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because see what it's doing, it's showing up in maybe an overreaction to something that maybe Aaron did or said, or snapping at one of my kids. I mean, just the other day, Murphy said something, my 17-year-old daughter, and man, I just reared up and, you know, basically, you know, yelled at her. And she's big eyes looking at me like, what just happened? And I'm just embarrassed. Now I feel failed. So now I feel even worse and going, what is going on? Why did I have that sort of reaction? I mean, I think part of what I'm trying to do is just get better at going right now in the season. What are some of the telltale signs that I'm shutting down, that my heart is closing, that I'm depressed? You know, for me, honestly, I mean, I know I joke about this a lot. But I had been doing great. I'd lost literally like 25 pounds and I'm gaining weight back. And I don't want to get up in the morning to exercise because I'm worn out and I'm dealing with family stuff, you know, working during the day, dealing with that stuff at night. And, you know, I can just tell there's things that I enjoy that I'm just not doing, and I'm having a hard time carving out like just times where Aaron and I can just go on a date or have fun or something. I turn to a bag of chips. You know, I eat to soothe and to deal with the stress. In either I have to go, all right, because I'm doing these things, I gotta, what's going on? What do I do? How do I deal with me right now as I'm depressed?
Well, I appreciate your honesty so much again, because I think you probably represent so many listening today. And if you want to chime in, ask questions, comment, we'd love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH. Talking to Dr. Greg Smalley just exactly about this. How do you navigate when crisis hits? There is a way. We're talking about that more in just a moment.
Well, I propose to you the truth is, marriage does not have to die. I know you're feeling like it's falling apart, and it can't go on anymore. But God is a God who knows how to heal, so just give it up to the Lord, and He will restore.
It's true, He will, you know. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley. We get him on a couple times a month on Wednesdays. And today we're talking about navigating crises. And sometimes the external crises can put more pressure on internal conflict. And Greg, you were talking before the break about your dad. And this health stuff he's been dealing with has been for sure a year. I mean, off and on, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been, it was July, sometime in July where he had 7 bypass surgery.
Yeah, amazing.
For his heart, so.
And for a while there, he and Norma lived down the road from you, then had to move to a warmer climate and different things. And he again was in the hospital, and you were talking about just in your own life, because you're managing multiple departments at Focus. You've got a family, a speaking, writing ministry, and then you're managing the family dynamics of your dad, of caring for a sick parent. There's so much
to that.
Just
to hear you say all that, I am reaching for a snack.
I'm so sorry. And one thing Aaron, Greg's wife, said is that he's seeming depressed. And you were saying some of the symptoms of just turning away from the things that actually nourish your soul. And so let's pick it up there, because oftentimes when we ignore it and we get busy, it comes out in different ways, as you say, overreacting and that kind of thing. So if this table was turned and you were, and this was a listener calling in, what advice would you give them for getting back to the things that nourish their soul so they can sustain the crisis? Because it's the very time we need those core things. What do you say?
I would say it, to that person, to me, you have to rediscover what can give you life.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie, you use that analogy all the time, and it's such a perfect one, but putting the oxygen mask on yourself before you were to put, you know, on an airplane, put that on someone else. And it is so true. And I know that. And yet it's so easy to rationalize, oh, I'm just so tired, I want to get up. This morning, actually, the alarm went off at 5, and I just went, no, I'm not getting up. And I went, nope, I am getting up. And just spent 30 minutes exercising and just, oh, that's what nourishes me. That's one of the things. But but I tell you, we had it was last night. Is I was preparing. I give a Devo here at Focus on Wednesday mornings, and so I was talking about just some element of marriage, like not making marriage an idol, which I'd love to talk maybe next time we get on, because it was such a good, but just being reminded of that verse in Matthew's, I think 6:33, that seek first the kingdom of God, and then all these things. I mean, it just, I'm listening to that as I'm just watching a little video in preparation for this, but it was exactly what I needed. I kind of went, yeah, that's true. You know, with so much that goes on in my marriage that still at the end of the day, I need to be seeking first Him, a relationship with God, and then doing these things to take care of me. And that's the greatest commandment. Love God, you know, love others as you love yourself. And so it was good. It was good this morning just to be able to do some exercising, to spend some time with the Lord and to feel refreshed. And yet, hey, already through the day, I've had to deal with some family stuff, some stuff here at Focus, and I already feel myself shutting down, going, I just want to get away from everyone. I mean, I could feel that pull to go into the cave. And you know, Susie, one of the things, I remember seeing some research that was really good, and I'm saying this literally for myself, because it's just, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot about this.
In fact, it was my research, right?
Yeah.
I want to
It was that good.
Yeah. I moved me.
Let me read a paragraph from my book.
Okay.
It said the idea was that when men and women go through stress, that we, obviously we handle it very differently, and for a lot of men, that we shut down and want to go into the cave, versus women want to reach out to the women. It's called the tend and befriend phenomenon. They want to tend to their children and reach out to other women, and that's exactly how I feel right now. Is I just want to go into the cave and crack open a bag of chips and just not think about any of it. But that kills me.
And that's the thing, is this is why storms oftentimes will blow up relationships, blow up marriages. And you'll hear married people say, you know, that was the crisis that killed us, because it does take some grit, I think, to hang on through a storm. But the thing is, you got to hang on to Jesus, of course, first and foremost, but some of the things that nourish your soul. And that's why there's some that come through the fire without smelling like smoke. I just think it does, as someone who's walked through my share of storms, again, like we're talking about, when it's an acute crisis, you just hang on for dear life. But when it becomes long term, you really have to figure out, what are some of the absolutes that are sustainable? Because if there's ever a time you need time with the Lord to sort through like grief, it's right now. If there's ever time that your wife needs to know that, as you know, as you ponder the idea of your dad being so ill, you know who you are and how you, it's now. And you know what I'm saying?
And so
just truly thinking about, and I think diet and exercise are just so key, and it takes a lot of grit, but it's amazing how it serves you well, because there's so many things pulling at you.
You know, to me, the so many verses in the Bible use sort of the two words that we are to know and be known. And so one, I have to know me well enough to recognize when I'm slipping into that despair, when I'm really wanting to go into the cave. And I do good sometimes and other times not so much. But I need to know me, but also have to be willing to be known my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the other part of this is that what's been so good, literally this did happen yesterday. I called her up. She sent me a text and went, "Hey, you know that speaking thing that you purchased tickets a month for?" She goes, "You made it for a totally different week." And I was like, I'm texting back, "Ha ha ha." You know, I did not. She's like, "No, I'm being serious."
Bought the wrong plane tickets?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a
You've
nice
got to be kidding me right now.
$45.
Let's see if I can say it two more times.
It makes me think of the shirt where the little kitten, where we are fur friends forever. So
that's
my
very
response
good.
Back
so
to
I'm
you.
So sorry. So you bought tickets for the wrong. Oh.
Yes. And so that was a nice, hundreds of dollars mistake. And so I texted her back and went, "That did it. That just pushed me over the line. I'm over. I'm done. I want out. I'm finished." And so when I got home, she's like, "Come on." And so she took me on a walk, not like
good
with
car.
A leash.
Yeah.
With the, you know, the
wouldn't
cat
have hurt,
leash.
But it's all right.
No, it probably would have been safer.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really good. Mm. And that's what I'm finding. I mean, Aaron and I have to be so intentional that we also have to care for our marriage as much as we need to care for ourselves to make sure we're doing all the things, Susie, you talk about, the diet and exercising, that we really have to be intentionally investing. I love that idea that the biggest myth, one of them about marriage, is that somehow love is self-sustaining. And it's just not.
Mm-hmm.
It has to constantly be nurtured. And it's hard when I don't feel like I have anything left to give. And sometimes I nurture my marriage by just being willing to allow my wife to nurture me.
Exactly.
And that's what it was about last night. And versus I didn't want to talk and just let's watch TV and no, we're going on a walk. Fine. And it was great. And just to be able to listen and to have her listen to me and not, I mean, there's no fix to this. You know, I mean, the stuff I'm feeling, it is what it is. And yet she did such a great job. But that's not, we've noted, well, we've had some of the biggest conflicts that we've had in, years have happened recently. I mean, just crazy
stuff.
Because
you're fatigued and stressed, is that it? Or what would
it? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a part of, as these crises settle in, it's easy to turn on one another.
Yeah.
And we've had some bad fights. It's embarrassing. I hate admitting that. Just being real.
Well, I appreciate that.
Ugly.
When you
I can be ugly at times.
Really? Because I thought it was probably all Aaron's fault.
That's what I told her, that she didn't believe me.
Sure.
You tell her, and maybe we won't be in a fight.
Absolutely not. I'm totally kidding anybody who's listening. Aaron's a dear friend. But truly, though, here again is a good example that we can turn on each other when the conflict's within us, but we can also turn on each other when the pressure's coming from without. And you often talk, you and Aaron both talk a lot about the team. If it's a loss for one, it's a loss for the team. Give us a team mentality perspective when because you've got people pulling at you from every direction. So how do you get into a place where you can think team with Aaron and team with the Lord with all of these things? I mean, something has to get in line and take a number. You can't be at the mercy of everybody else's demands on you. So what do you say?
Yeah, I love that verse in Genesis 11:6, and you've heard me share this before, but it's just so powerful that it's the Tower of Babel. So the people are building this tower for all the wrong reasons. But what's so intriguing about the verse is that God's watching them build this amazing tower, and He says in 11:6, Genesis 11:6, that wow, when all the people come together speaking the same language, nothing for them is impossible. And that's the importance of Aaron and I making sure that we are operating as a team, that we are coming together, we're unified. See, when Satan, during crises, he wants to destroy the oneness. See, that's what he's after. He hates the way God created marriage to be this amazing oneness, two becoming one. And the very thing that he's going to go after is to rip apart that oneness and create adversaries and separation and division. A house divided will fall. See, we have to remember this. And yet, when Aaron and I are on the same team, when we're talking things through and we're making decisions together, that's nothing then. Is impossible for us. And that's something that we keep saying, hey, okay, the enemy is out there. You are not my enemy. And the other day when we got in this big old fight, see, I was treating her as my adversary. I'm like, you're against me, and you know, whatever happened. And that's the part we have to choose. No, no, no. Remember, God's perfect design for our relationship is oneness. And there's amazing power in that to make it through whatever we're going through.
And that's a good point. And we need to then, I would say, look at the symptoms of our defaults when the crisis. You mean, you know when the crisis is on because you know you're facing it. Maybe it's a work problem, a family issue, a sick parent. But your defaults, we all have them, right? Our default mechanisms to cope is to eat, to drink, to buy, to hours on Facebook, whatever your thing is. But I just challenge you, pay attention to what you're defaulting to. And if there's excess there, I honestly think, Greg, when we default to those places, we're almost inoculating ourselves from an opportunity to grow because we're stuffing it back down, getting through the moment. And it's kind of like Esau. He traded his birthright for a bowl of soup. It's like the Bible says that he let his inheritance be beneath his notice. And I think there's a deeper inheritance in marriage and in us as kingdom Christ followers in the place of crisis. But if we just if we trade it for just to get through the moment, we miss the longer impact in the deeper part of the story, you know?
Yeah, of course, now you have me thinking about soup.
Of course I did.
Now I'm hungry.
Can I say it one more time? You've got to be kidding me right now. I don't know why that's
friends forever. When you know, part of what Aaron and I also are doing is that we're also reaching out to others. And you know, just this, the encouragement that you and Kevin give. Mm-hmm. But we've got a great support system here in Colorado Springs. We've got a wonderful small group. And I think that's the other part. I mean, you know, when you read verses like, you know, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for times of adversity. Okay, this is right now.
Exactly.
Who's going to be my friend? Who's going to be my brother? But again, it seems like my default is I want to keep quiet. I don't want to burden anybody. I want to pretend that I can handle all this on my own, you know, pull my own bootstraps up, whatever. And that's Satan's lie.
It is, because you isolate and you medicate, right? That's what we do.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when you
exactly.
say, when you say, he hates it when I'm right, but I'm so right right now.
It is so painful. Boy.
But I want to say, you know, you even said this is not an easy fix right now. Again, you might be speaking to somebody walking through a long-term crisis. If there's not an easy fix, there are still answers. There are still a best place to put your feet. So the answer isn't to default to isolating and medicating. There's a better way. And so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the opposite of isolating and medicating, because this is the place of fruitfulness. This is a place where you can actually grow. Your soul can be nourished in the fire, in the storm. It is possible. You think it's not? Greg's going to tell us how. Greg, you got like 2 minutes to think about this one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. We'll be back. More with Dr. Greg Smalley in a moment. So that wasn't on the plan. Way to go, Matt.
I had my phone out like a light waving
yeah,
it
at a concert. Friends are friends forever. Okay, I'm Susie Larson, and the wheels have officially come off the show today. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Greg Smalley. And we're talking about something serious, but even when we talk serious, it seems to go off the rails a little bit. But you got to laugh, you know? Otherwise, you get too stressed out, right?
I agree.
This is what we're talking about. We're talking about when marriage goes through a season of crisis. And this time, the crisis isn't within the marriage. It's outward pressure. It's a sick parent or caring for aging parents or problems at work or, you know, even a sick child. You know, when a child is sick and dealing with something like cancer or Crohn's disease or something, the pressure that puts on a marriage is significant. And what we were saying before the break, Greg, is our default mechanisms in coping is to isolate and medicate, because it's the bootstrap theology. We want to hike ourselves up, don't want to burden anybody, but then we medicate the pain because it's hard and we're not meant to do this alone. And before you know it, our buttons are getting bigger. People can push our buttons. Our responses aren't what they normally would be. And our marriage isn't what it could be. So let's take it from there. Talk about the opposite of isolation and why it matters.
You know, there's only two places in the Bible that we're told to do something every day. One of them is out of Hebrews 3:13 that says to encourage one another daily. And I've known that, and I try to do that. But boy, being on the receiving end of people just reaching out, how are you doing? What's going on? How can I be praying for you? Just, you know, if you just want to talk, I had a good buddy that I should say this way, we've become much, much better friends. We were sort of, I kind of knew him a little bit, but man, the way that he's pursued me as far as just reaching out and saying, hey, let's, I'm taking you out to movie. We're going to go get some pizza, whatever
awesome.
It is. And boy, just that encouragement. It's been phenomenal. And you're right. There's something so cool about the way that God designed us to be in community and how church really is that. And they're there, but it's, I have noticed that I have to fight that desire just to isolate. And
why don't we want to do that? Because you're not the only one. I mean, we all do that when we're hurting. On one hand, we don't want to burden people. Maybe we don't want to have them see us in a vulnerable place.
Yeah, we don't want to be weak. Mm-hmm. We want to, you know, we want to seem as we have it all together. We like to be a rock. I mean, it's vulnerable. It's awkward to kind of put yourself out there. You're taking a risk because what if you put yourself out there and someone doesn't respond? I mean, there's, you know, you get your hopes up. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. And yet, boy, I tell you, I'm so grateful for that. We had literally some neighbors show up the other day. Knocked on our door and Aaron invited him in. So I'm like, oh, hey, people, who are you? and they literally went, we are so humiliated. We know what you guys do. Can you help us? And they literally, the guy confessed to having an affair.
Wow.
and said, we don't know what we're doing.
Wow.
And I say all this to make this point that I think going through, it's so easy to get so consumed with just all the emotions and feeling shut down and just trying to manage all of whatever the crises is for you. That what I noticed is that Aaron and I kind of looked at each other like, well, what are we supposed to do now? Like, and I literally am like mouthing to her, I am too tired to help anyone, send them away. and yet we just said, man, hey, we are for your marriage. I don't even know who you are, but I am for your marriage. So what can we do to help? And what I realized is, boy, how much that has energized me in something about getting all pursuing some things that are beyond the stuff that we're going through, and kind of lifting ourselves out of that and going, God, we just want to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think I had any energy left, and it's been amazing to be a part of their story and to see them reconciling and that's given me so much energy.
Fantastic points. We're talking about isolating and medicating, our two defaults when we're in crisis. And one of the reasons not to isolate is because you need community around you. But you just made a fantastic other point. People need us around them, too. And I just think if we forget that we're meant to be a flow-through account, that we're always giving and receiving, giving and receiving. Do you know what I'm saying? We're not growing. And in crisis that you're in, when God uses you to reach out to somebody else, something in you gets healed. That's another reason not to isolate. And I think when you're in crisis, you kind of can tend to absolve yourself from other people's needs. But I just don't think that's the way that God has led us, because there's a time and a place to rest, but there is a time when we need to be interruptible so he can use us. I love that. So now, okay, the medicate side. This can look different on everybody. Everybody has their defaults. Some spend too much money shopping. Some spend too much time on Facebook, drinking, eating, whatever, racy novels, you know. So there's everybody has their default. But talk about the problem of medicating versus the opportunity of, instead of defaulting to that thing, seeing what God would do in that place of need.
Oh, I mean, what I notice is that when I'm medicating, so if I'm shut down in my cave, which literally is in our basement, I have a TV down there, so I've got a bag of chips and I'm crunching away, just watching TV, zoned out, checked out. Definitely, I need those times as an introvert. That's part of how I recover, but there's a big difference. And I know
when you cross over the line.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you just miss out. Man, I miss out on relationships. I miss out on what's going on with my kids. I miss out on an opportunity maybe with my wife or an opportunity with someone else. They're just missed opportunities. And is it the end of the world? No. You know, I mean, there are going to be a lot of those opportunities. I think what amazes me is that I never think about, am I a strong person? I mean, how much can I take, really? And I would never pretend to ever compare, like, hey, look what I'm going through, and it's, you know, way more than you're going through, or not as much as what you've gone through. I mean, there's some tremendously painful, I don't even like to think about things that Aaron and I might have to endure together someday. But it truly is amazing, though, to see that God gives what we need every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, God truly, that manna, he continues to sustain. And I think one of the things that Gary Thomas said this, I was watching something and it just so struck a chord in me that he was saying that in marriage, that the illusion, the myth is that you need to find someone to love you. And he goes, I don't care what you're going through. You never need to be loved. See, God has done that from the outset. I mean, God has filled that need already. And really, it's my job to now be great at loving. And there are times where I'm so convinced that I'm so worn out that I just need someone to come in and, you know, love me and just whatever, tend to whatever I need. And yet, it's just a great reminder that that medic, that stuff, it can't ever fill what God has already done. And part of it is just remembering and recognizing, boy, that he's already loved me and he's filled me up to with everything that I need. And in him is in my weakness, that's when he's made strong. I mean, there's so many great verses that we've got to be reading and rereading and memorizing and reminding ourselves of that every day. And again, I don't know what I'm doing, Susie, to be honest. I mean, this is all new territory for me. These are new feelings. These are new thoughts. This is a new season, a new chapter. And so, man, I'm walking it out. And I screw it up a lot. And I've done things. I'm like, that was really awful. And I can't believe I did that. But, man, I'm learning a lot, too. And I'm grateful.
God is with you, Greg. And you love him. And he loves you. And he's not going to forsake you. And I just can't thank you enough for your honesty in what you're dealing with, because it gets a lesson for all of us. And I think that the big takeaway today is, if you're walking through where the storms, it does matter what you do. And while there are moments where you treat yourself, where you need time with your chips and your TV or putting that spoon in the carton of ice cream, there's times for that, right? But we all know when we cross the line. And my encouragement to you is, if you hit that point where you know you're medicating, I just say there's an opportunity there, and especially to draw near in marriage, to say, I'm going to not do this now. I'm actually going to draw near to God and draw near to my spouse. And in this place of need, I'm going to see how he makes himself known, because he absolutely will. And I think that's how, if we go through the storms at the season of expectancy, that I can come through this stronger in him, stronger together, and not smell like smoke. That is the call and the invitation, that's I think, for each of us. Well, I wonder if, I always ask you to pray, but you're walking through the flames, so can I pray for you, brother?
Please.
Jesus, I thank you for my dear brother Greg and for Aaron and their family, the whole Smalley family, and I pray, Lord, that in his weakness you'd be his strength. And you promise, Lord, that a smoldering wick you'll not snuff out. And I just pray you cup your hands around him, you breathe life into him, life in a way that surprises him, where he would sleep deeply tonight, he'd wake up with a spring in his step, and that he would become an expert, God, at caring for his soul, Jesus. And I just pray you give him an abounding amount of grace to take the next step and take the next step. And I pray you carry the weight of this, the brunt of it, so that he would feel your light and easy yoke. And now we transfer that prayer to everybody else listening today who's also in the storm. This is a valley, and this too will pass. And so give us a hope to keep walking, keep trusting, keep believing. You are a faithful God, and we love you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. You're a good friend.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Keep remembering our dear Greg in your prayers. This is an intense time, and we appreciate you, Greg, so much, and I'll be remembering you as well. Yeah. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and you can find a podcast of today's show up in a little bit on our website, myfaithradio.com. Share it with a friend. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.